Greetings. This is Grigory Melnik from Microsoft Patterns and Practices team, and I have Irvin Vanderwolk, my colleague, here with me.
Hi, everybody.
And today we're going to talk about the caching application block and the various caching scenarios that we're now supporting with the Silverlight integration pack of Enterprise Library 5.0. And it's available in the current preview drops on CodePlex. So one thing that I would like to mention right away is that the caching block that you see, the caching application block implementation that you see in the Silverlight pack is not a port of the caching application block that existed in the Enterprise Library desktop version for several releases now. It's an entirely new implementation. It's a lightweight and more robust implementation, and it's designed specifically for the, specifically having the Silverlight line of business application developers in mind.
One thing to keep in mind is that the new Enterprise Library caching application block has been aligned with the new .NET 4.0 System.Runtime.Caching. Now, System.Runtime.Caching is not yet available in Silverlight, but since it's aligned with the desktop version, if it does become available in Silverlight, it should be really easy to swap out the base class that we used here and use the new Silverlight base class for that.
So let's quickly talk about the different types of data caching and what capabilities we're bringing with this block to you. When we think about data caching, well, any kind of data caching, whether it's for the Silverlight applications or any other apps you may be building, typically there are two types that developers employ. You have the reactive method of data caching, which you use to retrieve the data upon the request. So the application requests the data, and then it later gets reused. So it gets cached, and in the future cases, in the future requests, you're reusing that. And then you have the proactive data cache, in which case you retrieve all the required data that you predict you'll need in your app, and then basically you use it that way. So, Irvin, what are the different advantages and disadvantages of those approaches?
Well, I think the main advantage if you use reactive caching is that you typically only cache the data that's actually being used. So if somebody requests a piece of data, then that piece is obviously being used. And if you use the right parameters for scavenging, for example, to set if a value has a sliding expiration, that means that if it's being used, then it will stay in the cache longer, and items that aren't being used will get flushed out of the cache sooner, then you can build somewhat of a self-tuning cache, and that makes, you know, very good use of the system resources. Of course, the downside of yes, you're optimizing around the uses of resources. But the downside, of course, is that the first request is always going to be a bit slower because that first request hasn't cached that particular piece of data yet.
Yeah, makes sense. And then for the proactive, it's vice versa, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, if you proactively cache some data, you as a developer need to have a pretty good understanding of what pieces of data somebody's going to need. But if you've cached that piece of data ahead of time, then the user doesn't have to wait for that first request, so the response time is going to be a lot better. But then again, if you abuse this, and if you just, you know, cache everything proactively, then you will flush your cache with all kinds of stuff that you might not even need, and that could, you know, use some of the cache resources that you that could have been used better. And, of course, also those cache requests, the data has to be retrieved from the server. And if you do that, it might, you know, impede some of the other requests that the user actually makes and is waiting for. So you can use this, but use it wisely.
Exactly. So with the caching application block, we are providing two types of caches that you can use. You can use the persistent caching, which will utilize the isolated storage that you have access to in your Silverlight apps, or you can do the in-memory caching. And the beauty of the caching application block is that you pretty much have a single interface for interacting with these caches, regardless whether it's persistent or in memory, and you can, you know, the operations are pretty much the same. And then you can configure your caches as you please. So one thing that I should also mention before we jump into the demo is with the persistent caching in particular, if you think about the resources in your Silverlight app, this is something that is scarce and you have to manage your isolated storage carefully. So we provide the two knobs, two parameters for you to configure scavenging policies, right? And those are the policies that will go and inspect what's in your cache and remove the older entries and keep the latest entries, the fresh entries in the cache. So the two knobs that you have are the absolute value of the size, so the maximum size in kilobytes, or you can actually have a relative value, which is the percentage of the free space available in your in the isolated storage itself.
So Grigori, how does this work if you set a maximum value that's larger than your than the actual quota in your isolated storage?
The percentage of the free space, that's the one that will be used. So the minimum of the two is the effective size of your cache.
Now, if I specify a maximum size in kilobytes, that's basically saying the cache can never grow larger than that particular setting. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it will actually get to that particular size. For example, if you set a maximum size that's very large, 10 megabytes, for example, but you only have a 1 megabyte space in for the Silverlight quota, then, of course, the cache can never grow to 10 megabytes. And that's especially in that scenario is when the percentage of free space is used. So if you set the percentage of free space is calculated also by looking at the amount of space that's actually free in isolated storage to be used by caching. And if you set it to, for example, 90%, then scavenging will start when there's less than 10% of free space available. And that will mean that, you know, the 10% of free space will be available for other usages of isolated storage. For example, logging or another scenario. So essentially, you can use both of these parameters at the same time, and only the value that will actually yield the smallest amount of space will win. So if you set a very small maximum size, that will win. But if you set a very large maximum size, then that will only be used if somebody increases the quota and gives you also a large amount of free space.
And this is one of the one of the pieces here that we really seek your feedback. So if you don't think that the way we're offering to manage the cache size is effective enough, or if you're thinking about a different parameter or a different mechanism of how we should allow users to manage their cache scavenging policies, please get back to us as quickly as possible, because we're getting very close to our beta and the final release, and there's still a little bit of time to make changes if you make, you know, a very strong argument for your proposed solution. But if we don't hear from you, then this is pretty much the way we're gonna go in the RTM. All right. So enough talking. Should we switch to demo, Irvin?
Yes, please. Let me just switch over.
And it's going to be the same stock trader RI that we used in one of the earlier demos of the Silverlight integration pack when we showcased the cross-tier validation scenarios. So we're continuing to evolve it and add more and more functionality. And at the end, the vision here is that once we release the Silverlight integration pack, there will be this accompanying reference implementation that you could, go and learn from. You can go and dissect it. You can take a look at the way we've implemented all the different patterns with the reusable pieces that we provide in the enterprise library, and, you know, you can reuse the pieces of RI freely as well.
Okay, so what we're going to look at now is how we implemented caching. Now, we implemented three different kinds of caching within the stock trader RI. First, we're going to look at how we implemented isolated storage caching for storing the list of symbols that you're currently following. We're also going to look at how we implemented proactive caching with regards to the historical data. So if I select a particular piece of data, we want to make sure that that's very fast, so we implemented proactive caching there. And lastly, you will see down below here that there are news articles. Now, these news articles are also being cached, but they're only cached in memory. So if I select this now, of course, if I haven't retrieved it yet, it's going to retrieve it now. And
you haven't retrieved any news articles for the stock 3, so that's why it was taking time to retrieve them again. Okay, but now you have them all, right, for all the stocks. So technically, if you go and click on them, the articles should appear very quickly. Very nice.
Yep. That's the goal. So let's first look at caching in isolated storage. Now, if I start up the application by default, and let me just clear the isolated storage cache so we can see it.
But there is no black magic happening behind these scenes. That's nice.
Now, I restart the application. The first thing that the application is going to do is it's going to ask for more quota because we're going to use a lot of isolated storage space, but we cannot increase the quota unless the user actually gives us permission to do so. So we'll ask the user, we'll make a statement of why we want to do this. If I click to proceed, we'll see the Silverline dialog that actually shows that we're requesting a bit more space here. So if I click yes, then the isolated storage will be increased to 10 megabytes, and that will make sure that the maximum size that I've used is going to be used. Now, another thing that's going on here in the application, and I have to be quick because it's proactively caching the historic data, and as you can see now, it's already cached a whole bunch of this data, so it's going to be very quick. But if I delete the cache again, delete it, and I restart the application, I'm just going to say no to the question because that's slightly faster. It's loading up some data for the account position, for into the isolated storage. That's loading up the current stock values. And now if I click this, you will see that it's still loading historic data. So if I click this, it's not showing me anything because it's still retrieving this particular piece of data. But if I wait for a while until it's actually been downloaded, if we put in some wait statements here to make sure that it's not going to be downloaded, then it should appear, which it's not doing. Great. Ah, here it is. So now it's downloaded this information in isolated storage. Not all of them have been downloaded yet, so we'll see that this one has been downloaded. This one has now also been downloaded. See, it was just catching up. This one hasn't been downloaded yet, so it's going to download this one, but if I quickly click on one that has been downloaded, you'll see that by now all the things are in the cache. So this downloading has occurred on a background thread. For all of the stocks, download request was added to a queue, and we'll see how that works.
So was it an example of the reactive caching method that you were using, or was it proactive?
We both have proactive and reactive caching for the historical data here.
Yeah.
We have reactive caching for the position, because once you start up the application, it's going to load up everything. Mm-hmm. We also have reactive caching for the news articles, but proactive caching for historic data.
Got it.
So let's look at what that looks like in the code. First of all, what we have to do is, of course, create the cache. Now, we can do that in configuration, but in this particular example, we are doing it in code just to show off the different flags and knobs that you can use. So I'm creating a new instance of the isolated storage cache. And as you can see, there are a bunch of parameters that that we have to pass. So first of all, we're passing the maximum size of the cache in KB. Now you see here that we're passing in 5 megabytes as the maximum size. And if the user denies the request for more isolated storage space, then of course the cache is never going to reach that 5 megabytes. But that's why we also have this percentage of quota used before scavenging. So if there is a, we've set it to 50%. So if the cache actually reaches 50% of used space or free space, then it's going to trim the cache back to 10%. So this is quite an aggressive trimming strategy, but it was just also to show what's going on. Now, we register this particular instance of the isolated storage cache to the Unity container so we can request it later on. Now, one interesting thing that you might see here is that the isolated storage cache is based on object cache. Now, this was newly introduced in .NET 4.0. And object cache, unfortunately, is not yet available in Silverlight. But just to make sure that we align with the new developments in the .NET framework, we introduced a Silverlight version of the object cache. And of course, the goal is that once Silverlight actually has its own implementation of object cache, that you can very easily swap out this implementation and use the Silverlight version.
Yeah. So our objective, as Irvin pointed out, was to be aligned with the platforms, and also to provide a transition pass for people that would have least kind of blockers on that path. So we are mimicking the system runtime caching interface in our caching block. And again, once the Silverlight platform catches up, and I'm using quotes unquote with this scenario, and makes it available in one of the future versions, then it would be a really easy and smooth gradual migration path for you. Yep. So one other thing before you jump into this, Irvin, if I may ask, and we can show to our viewers here. So you are including here the isolated storage cache under serializer. We haven't actually talked about it. Should we just explain quickly the type of serialization mechanism that we are using here?
Yeah, that's a good point. In order to serialize this data to disk, we looked at several alternatives, and the one that looked that uses the least amount of space would be the JSON serializer that's already in the framework. So every object that you serialize into the cache is being stored as a JSON file. Now, this is actually an important piece, because every cache item is stored as a single file on the desktop. And that kind of means that it's better to store larger cache items than many very, very small cache items. Because each file will, at a minimum, take up 1 KB of space. And since we only have, 1 MB of space by default, it's better to just store a list of items per cache key than to store each item individually in the cache.
Yeah, if you have collections, then just cache the collections, the collection as a whole, as opposed to each individual item.
Okay. One other thing that I would like to mention here is that it's very easy in Silverlight to start up multiple instances of your application. Just press Control N in your browser, and you have a new instance of your application. Now, with the isolated storage cache, only one instance of your application will actually get write access to your isolated storage cache. The other instances will one time read the contents of your isolated storage, and from that point on start behaving like an in-memory cache. Now, the advantage of that is that you don't have to have all kinds of complicated locking mechanisms and synchronization mechanisms in this code, which could potentially also degrade the performance. And since caching should be used as just a convenience, something to increase your performance of your application, but not, drive the main logic of your application, it's something that you won't even notice, that if you start up multiple instances of your application, your application will still behave pretty much as normal.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, if you have the same app on the same client, but with the... you have multiple instances, multiple sessions of the same app going, one of those instances will use the full capabilities of the reading and writing cache through isolated storage. All others will automatically degrade to in-memory cache.
Exactly. Now, let's look at how we implemented caching here. Now, this is a very simple example. You will see that all the interactions with services are encapsulated within a certain service agent classes, as you can see here. In this particular case, the account position service agent. And since every call to a web service in SQLite is asynchronous, you will also see, of course, there's a begin update account positions and an update accounts positions completed method. So let's look at the begin update account positions. One thing you will see here is that we're looking inside of the cache, and we're seeing if the item that we're looking for currently has already been cached. And the way that we do that is we'll just retrieve the item and see if it's equal or not equal to null. The reason why we're doing this is if you can also ask the cache, hey, is this particular item present in the cache? And if so, I will retrieve it. But the downside is that the cache is multi-threaded. So it is very possible that you ask, is this particular piece of data in the cache? And when you try to retrieve it, then it's already gone. So that's something to keep in mind. It's better to use this style of interaction with a particular cache. So you ask if it's in the cache. If it is in the cache already, then we can just directly call the callback that the client passed in to say, hey, here's the piece of data that you requested. But if the item is not in the cache, then we'll have to start up an asynchronous download, forward the callback, and when that asynchronous download has completed, only then will we return that item. And of course, we have to put it in the cache as well. So here you will see if there is some data, and we are retrieving it here, then we are also setting it into the cache under a particular key and returning the result on the callback. Now, one thing you will see is that in order to specify how long a particular item should be cached, where you can specify cache item priorities, and also there's different options for expiration. So right now we're specifying that account positions will expire tonight at 12 a.m., which is just something we hard-coded. You can also configure this if you're using the configuration storage for this.
What about the priorities? What options do we have there?
Okay. So these priorities were copied from the system.runtime.caching. And there are basically two options. One is not removable, and the other one is default. Now, not removable is a bit misleading, because if the cache actually gets too full with not removable items, then the cache will actually expire these anyway. But not removable items can be used to say, okay, this is something that's very important, so I really, really want this to be in the cache and remain in the cache. So only, you know, in very dire circumstances, if the cache becomes, you know, flooded with these things, only then will we remove this. But in other cases, you know, the default cache item priorities will be removed first. So this is an example of reactive caching. You know, a request comes in, we'll see if it's already cached. If not, we'll download it and cache it for you.
Okay.
Now, there's also, of course, the option of proactive caching, which means that, and we've implemented that, by the way, in the market service agent, that you will have to tell a class, which we've called, this is actually not in Enterprise Library, but this is just an example of how you can implement proactive cache using Enterprise Library. You will have to tell some kind of proactive cache what should you download. So this is, in this particular case, we'll pass in a enumerable of symbols to start, you know, proactively caching. And what will happen is, if I open up this method, we're enqueuing download requests. And, you know, each one will just be stored in a queue and be downloaded on a separate thread. We can look at the implementation of this just in a second. Now, one thing that you have to pass in is the cache key, which we're now building using the symbol of the item being cached. And we also have to pass in a cache policy, which, of course, will determine how long this particular item will remain in the cache. Now, if the user starts selecting data, then there are two options. Either the item is already in the cache, or the item is not yet in the cache and will have to be downloaded. And the way that we implemented this here is in the method begin-get-market-history. Now you will see again that we're telling the proactive cache, get this piece of data for me. Now here we're passing in the method that will actually retrieve the data. Here's the callback when the UI should be updated, that this particular piece of data is present and, you know, displayed in the UI. We're passing in the cache key, and we're also caching in the cache policy. Now the way that this proactive cache works, it's kind of like a prioritized download queue. So if I open it up here, the prioritized cache, you will see that there is a list of download requests. Now inside of this list will just be downloaded on a background thread, which you will see started here. Each item will just be downloaded, you know, one after the other. But if the user actually requests a particular piece of data, then we'll just finish to the last download request that we started, and we will remember that the user requested this particular piece of data. So in the get data method. Now as soon as if the user very quickly selects one piece of data, then the other, then the other, then the other, and it might have started downloaded one, but it might just be very busy, then it will only remember the last get data request in this particular case. And the reason for that is that if the user clicks very, very quickly, and I can show that, if you click very, very quickly in the application, and it has to download all the historic data before it can actually show them, you only want the one that's currently selected, so the last request to that proactive cache, to be updated in the UI. And all the previous requests, you might want them to be downloaded, you know, at a particular point in time in the near future, because the user might click back to that one, but you're only interested in getting the one that the user currently selected as soon as possible. And that's what this demo application, this demo proactive cache does in this particular case. Now, as we mentioned, there is also an implementation of in-memory cache. And it's not that that interesting to look at, because it's very, very similar from the implementation of the isolated storage cache. But if I go to the news module, you will see here in the news module that we are creating an instance of the in-memory cache. There are some other parameters that we can specify here. We're no longer looking at the maximum size in bytes, just because it's very impossible in Silverlight to actually look at the actual memory consumption of an object. You just don't know how large an object is when you push it in the cache. So that's why we're only looking with the in-memory cache at the maximum amount of items that we're caching before we start scavenging. And you'll see here that, you know, we have 1,000 items limit. And, you know, once you reach that 1,000 items, it will start scavenging until the cache is only 800 items. And we're not caching this, you know, this is just a demo. We're not caching it very long, only 2 minutes. Now, we're registering this particular implementation under a different name in the container, so you can, you know, read it from, so you can get a different instance of this. And then in the news service agent, Newsfeed service it's called, you'll see again an example of reactive caching. The code is, you know, very, very similar, because it's just using, you know, an object cache, and this particular implementation doesn't know that this is being cached in memory. It's just requesting a dependency with the name memory. We could have named it anything else. And from that point on, it's just reactive caching as you would otherwise do as well.
So and pretty much the same mechanism of the same API for putting items into cache and looking up items in the cache. So it's again, and this you know, in the get news code, it's identical to the other code that we showed earlier.
Exactly, and it should be, because if you right now we've done all the configuration of the cache in code, but you could also do it in configuration. So if you could use configuration for this, you can just swap out in-memory cache and plug in an isolated storage cache, and everything would just behave exactly the same. Only when you restart the application, of course, if you use isolated storage cache, the data is still going to be there.
But the configuration demo, the demo of how we can configure it through external config, again, either in XAML or directly through the configuration console, the config tool that Enterprise Library has. That will be the subject of another demo that we'll do as a follow-up to this one. So just to sum up, we've seen how data caching can be used in your Silverlight line of business applications. We've demoed two different approaches, the reactive caching and the proactive caching, as well as we showed that you can have different syncs for your cache, whether you want it in in-memory or in isolated storage. And the last slide here to leave you with is where you can grab all this goodness. Right now it's still hosted on CodePlex. Just as usual, all the in-flight work, all the work in progress is on our nglib.codeplex.com. You see the corresponding homepage for the Silverlight edition. And the code examples are also available on CodePlex. So do remember to provide feedback on this blocks or on this block or any other blocks that we've released thus far. We really need it. We hear you. We act on it. So it would be really useful for us to hear back from you. Thank you for viewing, and talk to you soon with another demo.
Thank you. Bye-bye.